Good morning, everybody. I trust this is going to be a very interesting conversation. So towards the third and the fourth quarter of last year, there was some optimism around the South African economy recovering. And we saw that coming through in the fourth quarter and first quarter GDP numbers, some resilient recovery. But we must remember that that was off a low base. COVID-19, the pandemic, has completely wiped out the little bit of growth that South Africa was seeing. I mean, you will remember that the economy had been struggling long before the pandemic. One of the biggest issues there is one of unemployment. And now, because we've got the pandemic, the vaccine rollout has become center stage. And in the case of South Africa, the slow pace in which vaccines have been rolled out is a cause for concern for many industries. So you'll find that the mining industries, Sibanye-Stillwater, for example, getting its accreditation to be able to vaccinate its mine workers, committing to vaccinating about 18,000 today. And then obviously moving on to the community surrounding its operations. And then ShopRite as well, urging government to allow it to vaccinate its workers. And I think this is very important because the economy has been shut down on so many situations because of the lockdowns. And I think we are trying to prevent that going forward, especially what we're seeing now with this level four lockdown. So today we're basically discussing how 2021 has been performing. Obviously not too great, but we'll get into those insights. And then we're going to just get a sense of what the second half of the year may look like. It's difficult to predict because there are so many moving parts. There's a lot of global uncertainty because of the resurgence of infections with the new Delta variant. So we don't really know what's going to be happening, but it's going to be dependent on government intervention. And as I've mentioned, the rolling out of the vaccines as one of the important elements. So joining me today is Andrew Duvenage, who's the MD of NFB Private Wealth Management. So he's a financial planner and advisor, as well as a private wealth manager. Andrew has been on NFB's executive board since 2008 and has operated as MD of NFB's private wealth management since 2015. We also have Paul Murray, who's the MD of NFB's asset management. Now, in his role, Paul is responsible for the administration and management of NFB's asset management activities, which include local and offshore solutions. And obviously, to ensure that we have a well-rounded discussion, there's no discussion without a good journalist. We're joined by Yaku Fisser, who's the editor of FinWeek, and that you'll know is one of South Africa's leading voices in business and economics. And of course, a good source for important news and information to the country's business leaders and, of course, consumers of business news in general. So welcome to everybody, and let's get straight into it. Yaku, would you like to kick us off?
Yes, thank you very much, Rufiwa. If I can start with asking Andrew, the South African economy has seen a stronger than expected growth in the fourth quarter of 2020 and the first 3 months of this year. This was primarily attributable to strong global commodity prices and, to a lesser extent, consumer spending off the back of government's welfare spending, the grants that was given. And what can we expect for the second half of this year?
Yeah, so Yaku, I think as you correctly say, is the recovery was probably stronger than expected. Is if you rewound to the beginning of the year, if you looked at IMF forecasts, for example, is they were estimating growth level of around probably 4%. And all indications are that we will top that. And you're seeing quite a lot of revisions in terms of GDP expectations to around 5% for the year. As you correctly point out, is commodity prices have been a major, major tailwind for South Africa. And that's on the back of global demand for resources linked to recovery programs, which are being infrastructure led across the country. So that has been positive. We've also had a bumper agricultural export performance, which has been very, very good. And then, as you correctly say, there's been the added tailwind of COVID relief, specifically at the lower end of the income scale in the form of COVID grants. And those are certainly all positive and have surprised on the upside. So there certainly is good news from that. It must, however, be noted that when you have an economy which is put into almost an artificial coma and through the lockdowns that we have, the economic growth fall off that we saw last year of minus 7% would have resulted in some pent-up demand. And with economies opening up, is South Africa saw this this release of energy, and that has been positive. It's not unique to South Africa. It's been seen the world over. The trillion-dollar question for our economy and for others is this initial economic bump that we're seeing, which is better than expected, is it something that's sustainable and can be translated into a higher trend economic performance than we saw pre-COVID? Or is it almost the initial pent-up energy that will come through the system and then abate somewhat? And that really is what we need to look forward to for the second half of the year. You know, issues as Rafil we started with around vaccine rollout are massively important. For South Africa, the big question will be whether commodity prices hold up and continue to give us this tailwind that we see. We'll discuss later, I'm sure, whether inflation pushes the Reserve Bank and global banks into tightening interest rates prematurely. From a South African perspective, is the much vaunted infrastructure rollout or infrastructure program that we've heard about, we desperately need to see that get traction and actually start happening. And then what will be interesting is as COVID relief payments, social grants and the like start coming to an end, is how will that affect consumer confidence? And will we see the rug be pulled out of the consumer side of this economic bump? So those are the things that we'll be looking towards. And then outside of that, sure, you're watching quite keenly is how Treasury does in the wage negotiations that are coming up, because a huge amount of National Treasury's plan around stabilizing the South African position is around expense containment. Those type of factors will be informative to see whether they can hold that line for the second half of the year.
Yeah, and we've already seen the breakdown in negotiations at local government level regarding salary increases, even after it was sent to arbitration. The last time I worked out a figure looking at salaries as a percentage of overall operational expenditure, local government level, it was actually lower than national governments. And I know that the Municipal Workers Union hook their demands on the fact that local government employees, that's now excluding your councillors and your top five, as we call them in those municipalities, they still way to go. They're set to get a third of operational expenditure in their pockets. But I can't see how, at least at local government level, how those increases can be afforded. Remember, that's not that money doesn't come from Treasury.
Yeah, Yaki, I think you're correct. Is whether at local level or whether at national level, is the challenge is that the budget allocation towards increases is virtually at nil.
Yeah.
And the demands of the unions are certainly far north of CPI. And so to close that gap, even if there is a compromise, is it still somewhat north of what's being budgeted. So that's going to be difficult. And the paradox that we would see in that space is, ironically, the bump in economic performance that we're seeing at the moment and the better than expected recovery that we're having might actually work against Treasury in that it becomes a little bit harder to hold the line of very, very conservative negotiations when you're seeing slightly better than expected tax revenue collection, etc. So that's going to be a pivotal part that doesn't speak to economic recovery so much, but does speak to the macro picture of South Africa and its trajectory and the debt picture specifically.
Yes. If we can move along to key sectors being the driving force behind economic recovery, mostly the commodity sector, and the whole flow through in the economic value chain. I know that agriculture is the same. It generates about 2% primary agriculture, I think about 2% of GDP. But if you take it through the whole value chain, you get closer to 20%. How important are these linkages from the commodity sector and the agricultural sector to our economy? And what will make the commodity cycle stop?
Absolutely is. I mean, if you look at the agricultural sector, is clearly it's a massive employer, and employment is the Achilles heel in this whole equation at the moment. Is notwithstanding us seeing economic growth ticking up at a better than expected rate, is unemployment, unfortunately, is not reacting in the same way. It's going in the wrong direction. And I suppose the question that you have longer term is, will there be residual unemployment effects from COVID? And unfortunately, the early evidence towards that is yes. But clearly, when it comes to both agriculture and specifically mining, the immediate knock-on effect or the immediate effect that one would look towards is in corporate tax collection. And what we've seen is corporate income tax collection actually getting back to and slightly above the pre-COVID levels. The same can be said for VAT collections. The challenge for South Africa is collecting the majority of its income tax from personal income tax collection, and that is the segment that hasn't corrected yet to pre-COVID levels. So clearly, the longer that a commodity cycle stays strong, the better. This will be good for South Africa, although, as has been noted before, once again, one of the challenges with the strong rand that we're seeing is it is undermining the rand level of exports that you receive. You know, with 15 to 20% strengthening in the currency, although you're exporting a lot in the form of agriculture and resources, is the conversion into rand is negatively impacted by the strong rand. But be that as it may, it flows through into a lot of things. But coming back to the original question around the economic prospects for the country, is for us, the actual challenge that we sit with is whether you are able to get economic growth post the initial bounce to levels that are higher than they were over the previous decade, and to break the trend of sub-potential growth. And when one looks at the commodity cycle and the receipts that you've got your mining companies receiving, the big question would be, are they investing this windfall in the creation of supply capacity, or are they passing this windfall through in the form of dividends to investors? The latter is obviously good from an investment perspective, but it doesn't help the economic growth picture, whereas the former is clearly going to be better for the long term. And as it stands at the moment, it seems that there isn't a huge amount that's taking place in the form of reinvestment. A lot of it is being passed through in the form of dividends. That's good for treasury, for revenue collection initially. It's good for investors. But the longer-term picture and the real solution to South Africa's challenges sits in economic growth.
If we can now move on to a very hot topic the world over currently, is inflation. Some commentators say it's short-lived. Others predict it will have a more lasting effect. We've seen shipping costs, as in from moving a container from Shanghai to Rotterdam, skyrocketing. And it reminds one of back in the great financial crisis, when the Baltic Sea Index collapsed, when nothing was moved, basically. It is now basically the opposite. In addition, food prices are picking up around the planet and leaving its mark on South Africa's maize and soybean prices, which are derived from the Chicago Bulls. And those are two important ingredients in poultry production, which is one of the biggest proteins in the country. Add to that the heated commodity market, where the price of iron ore remains high. And it seems like input prices for most manufactured goods and food will soon start to rise more permanently. Are these but temporary issues, or are they here to last? What will be the impact of inflation on local and global stocks? Paul, your thoughts on this?
Okay, thank you for the question. I think it's helpful when you look at inflation to look at four components. The first component is current rates of inflation. The second latest CPI print was at 5.2. We had G7 inflation recently coming at 2.9, and you would have seen US inflation recently just under 5%. I don't think those current rates of inflation are terribly helpful for assessing local markets, because that information is already known and the markets would have priced that in. Potentially what's more helpful is looking at expectations for inflation in the future. What we're seeing currently is markets pricing in somewhere between 5 and 6 for certain inflation in the medium term, and something around 4% for global developed markets. Again, I think that's not terribly useful for assessing the value present in markets, because markets have already priced that data in. So what's perhaps more relevant is the third component, which is having a look at what is not perhaps priced in now. I think there are two or three things there. The first item is whether inflation surprises us on the upside so that we get more inflation than we anticipate. or, and this is not widely known, is whether the temporary increase in inflation actually abates much sooner than people would think. And then the final component is whether we're entirely wrong in all of that and the Reserve Bank does something like adjust the inflation target range itself, which they alluded to earlier this week. So when I look at what effect that'll have on local and global markets in future, what I'm looking at is what is the surprise factor here? And if inflation turns out to be much higher than markets anticipate, then clearly central banks will need to be more aggressive and markets probably won't react well in that environment. If the inflation environment turns out to be more deflationary than anticipated, which is a very peripheral view, then markets will probably do better than anticipated because banks won't have to respond as aggressively. And then the third aspect of the Reserve Bank perhaps changing the playing field entirely at some point in the future means that we have to throw out all of our thinking at the moment and reassess. Markets won't wait for that to happen. They'll start thinking about that right now and price that into markets through probably greater volatility.
Thank you. Andrew, what, given your outlook for inflation, is the view on interest rate movements globally and locally?
Yeah, Yakus, I think you're 100% correct. Inflation is a massively important factor. So on the local side of things, I think the expectations are for 1 to 2 25 basis point increases towards the end of the year. But a lot of that is going to be contingent on whether the inflation uptick that we're seeing accelerates. And if that is the case, is you will find that there has been a hawkish tone inside the South African Reserve Bank. But in saying that, the fragile state of the South African economy, especially the internal aspect of it, which I'll get to in a second, would mean that I think that they would be quite cautious in tightening too quickly. So when one looks, people reference, for example, these trade surpluses that we've been having, and we spoke earlier that there has been, you know, a significant element of that which can be attributed to the export component, to commodities and to agriculture. But if you look at the import side of things, as the import side of that equation has been subdued. And when you saw in the last month, I think it went backwards by a further 1%. And what that says is the internal side of the economy is still somewhat weak. So the expectation would be that I think they would be cautious about tightening too quickly, but some of that might be beyond our control. So it was informative to look at the Fed, where for the first time they started introducing in their talking points that the inflation that they're seeing in the States is potentially more structural than many people had alluded to earlier. And that might result in interest rates increasing a little bit sooner than expected. And immediately when that started to happen, is you look at the behavior of the Rand, is the Rand was at around 1350, which was about 2 weeks ago. And if we look as we speak now, the Rand's closer to 1450. And a lot of that has to do with interest rate expectations. Clearly, the rest of the globe does take a cue from the States. And so there's going to be a lot of focus on whether the stimulus, be it COVID relief, infrastructure spend, or just general budget creep under the Biden administration, whether that is going to result in higher inflation over time and whether that starts pushing up what is effectively the reference interest rate for the rest of the world. However, the last point that I would make there is that if you rewind to about October of last year, is the Fed introduced what is, I think, a seminal change in terms of their policy around interest rates, where historically they've looked at targeting 2% as an inflation rate, as an absolute number. And in October, they turned around and said that actually they were looking for an average of 2%. And there's a very big difference between absolute and average, because what that means is that they would be comfortable allowing inflation to drift a little bit higher for an extended period of time while the average catches up. And that's exactly what we're seeing at the moment, is inflation in the States is sitting at 4 or 5%, and the jury is out on whether that's a temporary thing or a permanent thing. But clearly the global inflation picture is going to be informative. The Rand, as it fits into this equation, is obviously very important, because with South Africa being an importer of, you know, a huge amount of things, oil, etc., the strength of the Rand has been a boon for us in that it's kept a lid on inflation. Ironically, it's happened at a time where we're not importing all that much, and one hopes that the Rand can stay at these type of levels so that you don't have the impact of imported inflation, which then puts pressure on the Reserve Bank to start tightening before we thought.
Talking about the Rand, if we can quickly look at what to expect for the rest of this year. We've seen the highest trade surpluses in years since the beginning of this year, basically driven by the commodity exports. What can we expect of the rand's behavior for the next 6 months? Because it does have an important influence on exporters, South Africa being a big exporting country. Which factors should people watch out for?
So factors that might influence the rand over the next 6 months. Clearly, we've got local government elections coming up. The macro-political environment has been reasonably good lately, and the rand has weakened in the face of that. Another factor to look at would be how the country is impacted by this third wave. The data that we're seeing this week indicates that this third wave is likely to be worse than the second. And I think it's inevitable that level four lockdowns get extended. So that'll be a factor to look at in the next 6 months. And then the global factors that might influence us are clearly the carry trade has been something very important for our country. The fact that foreign investors can get significantly more by investing in this country than they could perhaps in their own markets, even after you adjust the risk of our local markets. That argument might weaken a little bit over the next 6 months if global central banks start lifting their interest rates and foreign investors get rewarded more for staying where they are. Probably those three factors, I would say, are the biggest ones.
Yaku, if I could jump in there, is I think we've spoken before and we're in agreement that, you know, calling the rand in the short term is a graveyard for journalists, for analysts, for market commentators. It's such a difficult thing. But as Paul correctly alluded to is, you know, as South Africans, we probably focus on South African factors quite myopically and think that those are the key determinants of what the rand's up to. But in reality is the external factors are probably bigger drivers. And I think as Paul started off a little bit earlier there is it was interesting to watch over the last month and even over the last week is we've had two very important constitutional court judgments, which are pro-institution, which are good for South Africa in the fight against corruption, so to speak. You've had a trade surplus, which has come back bigger than expected quite recently. And notwithstanding that, you've probably seen 2 or 3% weakness in the last week, which is counterintuitive because you would think with those positives is you would see that as positive for the rand. And I think what you can infer is that the global picture is probably the primary driver behind it. Global confidence and risk appetite is massively important, and that to a large extent is beyond our control. The inflationary picture globally and what interest rates do, the carry trade, as Paul references, is also going to be massively important. So as much as there are these green shoots and these positive things, which we shouldn't discount, is I think we do have to acknowledge that the rand is still an extremely volatile currency, which can go from, you know, the best performer to the worst performer in a quarter from an emerging market perspective. And as such is, I don't think that we should absolutely take from the rand of the strength that this is a tip of the hats from markets towards the South African picture, that all is absolutely fine and well, that we're through the quagmire, so to speak. We still have challenges and we still have the risks to the economy which need to be dealt with. So when it comes to the rand, I think the only thing that you can bank on is it will be volatile and you will see movement in both directions. And from an investment point of view, which is what you know, NFP focuses on in terms of advice to clients, you have to make sure that you are protecting risk inside a portfolio, make sure that diversification is there and that you don't get carried away by the short-term movements. Because, you know, if you look at the headlines in newspapers, the rand sort of fell out of bed during the depths of the COVID crisis, and it was sitting at 18s and 19s to the dollar. You know, it looked like it was the end of the world for the currency, and 30 rand to the dollar, here we come. Fast forward 13 months and the rand's at mid-13s, and suddenly the sort of message is that this thing is going to 8 or 9 rand to the dollar. And I think you've got to try and get away from the short-term noise. Long-term, the trend for South Africa is rand weakness. And as you have higher levels of inflation, typically in South Africa compared to our trading partners, that's probably a reasonable expectation in the medium to long-term, and certainly from these levels.
And I think what hooks onto what we just discussed now is confidence in South Africa as an economy. It remains stubbornly low. We've seen the consumer confidence index coming out recently. Confidence is low from offshore investors, local consumers, local businesses, and the risk premium demanded on domestic government bonds are higher than comparable emerging markets. Paul, is this really an issue of trust in how the government manages the domestic economy, or are there other factors at play here?
In my view, it's absolutely related to confidence in how the government behaves, but it's not the only factor, as you rightly reflect. consumer confidence is low and fortunately getting lower. Business confidence will inevitably follow that. And we've got to factor into it international investors that may find better returns elsewhere. The question is not whether that's a fact or not. That's well known. It's whether the yield on South African investments compensates you for that. And if it does, then even on a risk-adjusted basis, it may still be worthwhile investing in what you alluded to earlier about South African government bonds. I think there's quite a lot of headroom between a 10-year bond yielding 9, an inflation rate of 5, and a global interest rate environment of 1 to 2%. You may find that foreign investors and local investors are sufficiently compensated for taking on that risk that the government is not behaving appropriately and that consumer and business confidence are extremely low.
Paul, just to come in there, as you talk about the investment, how do we then, as we try to attract and offer the yields that any investor would like to see, accelerate growth in the country? Because that's essentially what any potential investor would like to see. How do we begin to do that?
So growth is the only solution to the majority of South Africa's troubles. So the key question is, how do we accelerate growth? Well, firstly, we need to stamp out corruption, which is currently happening. It takes far longer than most people are comfortable with, but it is a legal process and needs to follow its course. What you can't have is a corruption process that is undone in years to come because people didn't follow the law. Then the other item is to stop wastage. The Auditor General report on municipalities this week was disheartening, but enlightening in terms of how much wastage there's going on. You could potentially accelerate economic growth through that. The primary way of doing it is simply by removing barriers to do business. Open up some spectrum. The recent allowance for 100 megawatt hours to be produced on site is terrific. And if the government can continue to do that sort of thing, I think we can reasonably accelerate our way out of this. The trouble for attracting investment is it's not just about how much growth we generate, but how much growth we generate relative to other markets. And I'm not convinced that even if we did all of that, that we would do anything better than some other market out there.
I want to agree with what Paul just said. Building confidence is not a quarter-on-quarter exercise. It takes time, it's accumulative, and I hope the momentum lasts.
So I think the key issue over here is that whilst the short-term bounce that we've seen is certainly welcome, the actual question is whether this can be converted into long-term momentum and we can get the trend of growth above where it was historically pre-COVID. Because the only way that we deal with the debt issue in the country, that we start making inroads into social issues, is through economic growth, which is much higher. Government has to focus on its role as the enabler of economic activity and the enabler of economic growth, as opposed to the primary driver of economic growth, because that sort of focal point hasn't really got us to where we need to be. So there are a lot of things that they can do in terms of regulation, in terms of facilitation, and we hope that that becomes the focal point going forward, because without that, if we revert to what the IMF were looking at of levels of around 2% growth going forward, it's not going to be enough.
My concluding remarks reflecting on policy reform are that the government is the enabler of what goes on. It sets the playing field on which we all operate. It will take time to enact structural reform, but if they can get that right and get out of the way, I think South Africa is extremely well positioned to address some of its social ills and some of its economic troubles. And then what I would encourage investors and listeners to this podcast to do is it's very easy to come up with views, but what's more difficult is to make those views reflect in your portfolios. So engaging with publications like Yahoo's and with people like Andrew will be very instructive to translate all these broad concepts we've been discussing today into tangible things investors can include in their portfolios.
And then Yaku, this is something as a journalist that I've struggled with quite a bit. And I'm wondering if you've had the same issue. So we hear from analysts like Andrew and Paul and various other organizations that are kind of analyzing the lay of the land in South Africa and predicting what the landscape is going to be in the medium or the long term. But government very rarely engages us in the form of interviews and so unless they are giving budget speeches or press conferences. You can't call a DG up on a random day and just kind of get his sense of what's happening. Do you find that the lack of engagement with government, especially at a crucial time like this, really inhibits the amount of information that you would otherwise be able to afford your reader?
It's a very good question, Rufewa, because it is frustrating. When there's a lack of information flowing from someone like a DG, a minister, municipality, in the end, all that we can do is look at what happens on the ground. And this goes back to the institutional reworking in South Africa that we see now. Andrew's touched on it. Paul has touched on it. There are, from a macro perspective, cleaning of the house happening. We've seen it with SAA, Eskom's debt turnaround. We've seen it with the electricity generation policy being changed suddenly. So you need to look at what is happening when there's not enough information coming through from the government or from government institutions. So yeah, I think what we are seeing now is basically a cleaning house exercise that will hopefully be a long-lasting exercise for government.
Thank you so much for those insights, Yaku. It's very disturbing, you know, as you alluded to earlier, that the only information we can get is on the ground and those that are supposed to be leading us aren't always very forthcoming with that information. We could spend days discussing South Africa, South Africa's economy, the markets of South Africa and the global implications that are there within. But unfortunately, we have reached the end of this discussion. And I think some of the important takeaways here, especially in the advent of COVID-19, is the role of central banks. We saw the South African Reserve Bank, for example, making some extraordinary moves at the peak of the pandemic, doing things like buying SA bonds, reducing interest rates by 300 basis points. And while it's been alluded to that we're going to be seeing some increases towards the second half of the year, they were on board in terms of making sure that the adverse effects of the pandemic weren't too bad on the economy, especially the consumer. We've spoken about policy certainty and structural reform and the importance thereof. And we are starting to see some of that coming out with decisions made around SAA and Eskom. So there are some green shoots in terms of the direction that government is taking. I think one thing that's going to be very important, and Yaku and Andrew spoke quite extensively about this, is the role that National Treasury is going to be playing going forward. They handle the fiscus. The fiscus is very important for the economy. And because we are seeing an improvement or recovery in the economy, their negotiation stance with the unions is going to be a little bit more difficult. But I think what investors are going to be looking at here is, can National Treasury hold its ground, be as austere as it can be, so that we start to see some sustainable growth going forward? And then, of course, just trying to mitigate all the risks that come with the lack of the rollout of the vaccines that we've seen in South Africa. And just watching very closely how the commodities super cycle, as it's been referred to, is going to continue to positively impact South Africa. We've spoken about the revenue collection, but revenue collection and investment in the country are two very different things. And I think that to be able to turn those dividends into investment, we're going to need to start to see more decisive action from government. And hopefully that will come through sooner rather than later. So that is what I have taken away from this conversation. It's been very good, gentlemen. And I appreciate the time that you all have spared this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Rufewa. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.